Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to our post-results teleconference for the quarter ended June 2021. I do wish that you and your families are keeping safe and well. For today's call, we have with us Dr. Sharvil Patel, Managing Director, Mr. Nitin Parekh, Chief Financial Officer, Mr. Vishal Gaur, Senior Vice President, Corporate Finance, and Mr. Alok Garg, Senior Vice President from the Managing Director's Office. This quarter on, we have started the practice of sharing quarterly results investor presentation, which we have posted on our website and filed with the stock exchanges. I'm sure you would have received the same. Among our two key markets, India and the US, the contribution from the India geography has increased. This has offset some of the challenges in the US during the quarter, resulting in a healthy double-digit growth in revenues and in EBITDA with an improvement in operating margins. Coming to the quarter, despite the onset of the second wave of COVID-19 in India and the consequent challenges posed by it, our business grew in double digits, aided by strong performance in the India geography. With that, let me take you to the financial numbers for the quarter gone by. As you are aware, the transaction of sale of our animal healthcare established markets undertaking of Zydus Animal Health and Investments Limited was completed recently on the 14th of July 2021. The consolidated financials for the period ended June 2021 up to the PBT level do not include the financials of the animal health business and financials of the previous quarter and previous financial year have also been restated to correspond with the figures of the current reporting period. Net profits from health for all the periods have been shown separately as profits from discontinued operations in the profit and loss account. During the quarter, we posted consolidated revenues of 40.3 billion rupees, up 15% year on year. Consolidated EBITDA improved during the quarter and stood at 9.33 billion rupees, up 18% year on year. EBITDA margins for the quarter stood at 23.2%, which is an improvement of 140 basis points on a quarter-on-quarter basis. Various process simplification and efficiency enhancement initiatives aimed at optimizing the costs resulted into the improvement in EBITDA margins despite the inflationary pressures. Consolidated PAT for the quarter was 5.87 billion rupees, up 29% year on year. Our India geography comprising of human health and consumer wellness business, which contributed to 50% of the consolidated revenues during the quarter, witnessed a very strong growth of 43% on a year on year basis and registered sales of 19.4 billion rupees. The US geography comprising of generics and specialty portfolio posted sales of 14.5 billion rupees during the quarter, down 4% quarter on quarter. Our emerging markets business grew by 17% on a year-on-year basis and posted sales of 2.77 billion rupees. On a sequential basis, the business grew by 11% during the quarter. Now let me take you through the operating highlights for the first quarter of FY22 for each of our business lines. Starting with our human health business in the India geography, the pharmaceutical business market in India registered a healthy growth of 37.2% during the quarter gone by, aided by the lower base of the previous year and contribution from the COVID portfolio. In line with the market, our business also registered a strong growth during the quarter. Overall, our human health formulations business posted sales of 13.57 billion rupees during the Q1 FY22, up 64% on a year-on-year basis. The growth was supported by both the COVID portfolio as well as good performance of the base business. Branded generics business grew by 67% on a year-on-year basis during the quarter. We gained market share in the anti-diabetic, anti-infective, and the nutraceutical therapeutic areas during the quarter vis-a-vis the corresponding quarter of the previous year. Going forward, with a reduction in the COVID-19 cases across the country and relaxations of restrictions, we expect the demand for medicines to normalize due to increased footfalls in the doctor clinics. During the quarter, our consumer business witnessed a strong growth in 5 out of 7 brands that resulted in an overall 10% growth on a year-on-year basis and revenues of 5.9 billion rupees. The summer season brands Nycil and Glucon D could not capitalize on their full potential due to a short summer and lockdown in many states. With markets opening up, we see strong in demand across channels. Now, let me take you through the performance of our US formulation business. As mentioned earlier, the business saw a sequential decline in revenues during the quarter gone by. Reduction in cases of supply disruption in the market resulting in limited one-time opportunities and pricing pressure in some of our products led to this decline. However, despite the increased competition and pricing pressure, our US generics business could grow the overall volumes during the quarter. Recently, in the month of July, we received the final approval for fulvestrant injection, which is the first approval of a complex product from the biologics manufacturing facility. This product got the approval in the first review cycle by the US FDA and was approved in less than 10 months of filing. Recognizing the importance of digitalization and advanced analytics in improving healthcare delivery, offering better customer experience, and building responsive backend, we have taken multiple digitalization initiatives in our human health formulations and consumer wellness business in India and also our manufacturing operations. In the human health formulations business in India, we are working on a platform technology that will connect the entire value chain to drive quality, productivity, operational efficiency, resulting in enhanced patient centricity, better prescription engagement, comprehensive disease management, and an improved healthcare delivery experience to all the stakeholders. On the consumer wellness front, the digitalization initiative will help get real-time demand visibility across channels, market trend analysis through predictive modeling, efficient management of inventory, better ROI on trade spend, and also enable close monitoring and governance of other functional KPIs. On the manufacturing operation side, we are working on the use of advanced digital and analytical tools that will enhance overall compliance and efficiency through simplification, resulting in increased throughput by unlocking equipment effectiveness, productivity by avoiding redundancies, and adopting lean work practices to optimize costs. During the pandemic, we saw the opportunity to completely relook at our entire operational spend and initiated the process of zero-based budgeting in our major business, mainly human health formulations business in India. This initiative will help optimize both direct and indirect spend and build internal capability to attain sustained savings over time. The manufacturing operations and zero-based budgeting initiatives put together are expected to improve our operating margins by 80 to 100 basis points. Now, this concludes the business review. I would now request Dr. Sharvil Patel to take you through the progress and initiatives in our innovation program. Over to you, Dr. Sharvil Patel.
Thank you, Mr. Naik, and good evening, ladies and gentlemen. As you all know, continuing with our efforts to combat the COVID-19, we have applied for an EUA to the Office of DCGI for the ZyCoV-D vaccine with an interim phase 3 clinical trial efficacy data for the 2 milligram dose study. The trials were conducted in over 28,000 volunteers at more than 50 clinical sites spread across the country and during the peak of the second wave of COVID-19, reaffirming the vaccine's efficacy against the new mutant strains, especially the Delta variant. This was also the first time that any COVID vaccine has been tested in the adolescent populations in the age group of 12 to 18 in India. Around 1,000 subjects were enrolled in this age group and the vaccine was found to be safe and very well tolerated. We have also submitted the dossier of ZyCoV-D vaccine for an EUA to DCGI with the trial data for the 3 milligram dose study also, which is a 2-visit vaccine. On the NCE front, recently in the month of July, we are very happy to say that the EMA, the European Medical Agency, granted orphan drug designation to saroglitazar magnesium for primary biliary cholangitis indication. ODD status provides us with an exclusivity for 10 years if the treatment gets approved. PBC is a disease with a global prevalence of approximately 40 cases per 100,000. Women are much more likely to be affected by PBC than men, and the incidence increases after the age of 50. Across the world, PBC primarily affects an estimated 1 in 1,000 women over the age group of 40. Global market for PBC treatment is expected to grow at a CAGR of 36% from 2018 to 2026 and is expected to reach approximately $11 billion by 2026. Approximately 40% of the patients are either non or partial responders to the current modes of treatment, resulting in a highly underserved patient population. We are hoping that saroglitazar will solve for one of these critical outcomes and become a successful product as we move forward. In India, we received an approval from CDCO to initiate phase 1 clinical trial for a novel multi-dose anti-malarial molecule, ZY19489. This molecule has already been trialed in Australia. Coming to the biosimilars, during the quarter, we launched trastuzumab emtansine, the first ADC biosimilar and a highly effective drug for the treatment of both early and advanced HER2-positive breast cancer under the brand name Ujvira. The drug has significantly reduced the cost of treatment by almost 80% for all patients. Talking on IFIB2 and specialty initiatives, during the quarter, we received a response from the US FDA against our pre-NDA meeting for a pain management product. NDA for this product is expected to be filed during the current financial year. During the quarter, we completed 6 in-licensing deals. 5 out of the 6 products are expected to start contributing to the revenues from FY23. Cumulative number of such in-licensed products now stands at 24. Out of all the in-licensed products, for 2 products, we are likely to hold an exclusive first-to-file status and are likely to have a 180-day exclusivity upon launch. Thank you, and we'll now move over to the Q&A session. Over to the coordinator.
Thank you very much. Ladies and gentlemen, we will now begin the question and answer session. Anyone who wishes to ask a question may press star and 1 on their touchtone telephone. If you wish to remove yourself from the question queue, you may press star and 2. Participants are requested to use handsets while asking a question. Also, participants connected on webcast, please click on the below link to follow the instructions to ask questions via audio. Anyone who wishes to ask a question may please press star and 1. first question is from the line of Tushar Manglani from Motilal Oswal. Please go ahead.
Yeah, thanks for the opportunity. So just on this in-licensing deal, you alluded for revenue contribution from FY23 onwards. Any further color on this in terms of further quantifying or how much this revenue contribution can be?
So I think most of the in-licensing deals we have done are where we have gaps in our portfolio or where we may have lost some opportunity on first to file. So the in-licensing opportunities are generally products which are very niche or very products which have low competition. So they all have a significantly high, good commercial potential than any of the normal molecules. So they are obviously the high value products. Exact value is not possible to give in terms of the next 2 to 3 years forecast for that. But some of them do fall in the complex injectable space and some in the oral space. As I said in my call also, that two of these products is also where we have got 180-day exclusivity potentially. So they are all meaningfully large value products.
And these will be manufactured at our field?
So largely, many of them are manufactured by the company whom we license from because they are complex in nature, either the API or the formulation. Few of them we will do manufacturing ourselves, but by and large, many of them are sourced through the third the licensing.
And just lastly, how much would be the share of COVID-related revenue for the quarter, either in the human health business?
I couldn't understand the question.
So the share of COVID-related revenue in the human health business for the quarter gone by?
So large part of the revenue, majority of the revenue was obviously, there was Remdesivir. Minus Remdesivir, our growth was 35%+ for the branded formulation.
Got you. Thank you. That's it from my side.
Thank you. Our next question is from the line of Kunal Dhamesha from MK Global. Please go ahead.
Thank you for taking my question. So first on the US business, we said the weakness is attributed, one of the factor is one time buy. I think that should be positive impact, right? So was that in this quarter or the last quarter we had some one time buy which did not recur in the first quarter?
So one time buy, we have been seeing it for many years in the last 12 years because of disruption in supply chain. In the last 6 months, we've seen this one time buys have dried up because there is very little issue with supply chain in the US. So we haven't seen any meaningful one time buys in the last 6 months.
Sure. And secondly, I think we have launched like 4 products in US. Vis-a-vis our target was somewhere around launching 30 to 35 products. So are we still on track to achieve that?
So in the US, we still do expect to get close to 50 plus approvals, some being tentative, and we will still achieve 30 plus launches.
Sure. And secondly, on the vaccine opportunity, now that around 55% of the adult population has been vaccinated with at least one dose, and every lost month is reduces the remaining market by at least 20-25%. So how do you see this opportunity now, and in the adult market as well as in the adolescent, and on the adolescent front, have we also submitted for emergency use authorization for our vaccine?
So on the second question, yes, we have submitted for EUA for the adolescent population, and we are also hoping we will see approval for that, and we'll, as soon as we know anything more, we'll apprise everyone about it. With respect to the opportunity for COVID, our current capacities that we are fully, if we fully manufacture ourselves, is at the max between 10 million to 15 million doses monthly, which is not very large in terms of the overall need of the vaccination. So even at the adult population, I think for us, I don't think the difficulty will be in being able to secure the business for the quarter, the manufacturing capacity that we have. So we still feel we should be able to, be able to supply whatever we can make, because we are not, you're talking about 1 crore doses or 1.5 crore doses, which are not very large in the overall requirement point of view.
Sure. And if I may squeeze in the last one, in terms of vaccine manufacturing, have we started stockpiling? Because I believe our plant was supposed to be commercialized somewhere in July. So have we started stockpiling in the anticipation of approval, or we'll start manufacturing at commercial scale after approval?
So in our smaller facility, we have started manufacturing commercially for stockpiling. In our new facility, it's the activities are starting as of this week.
Sure. Thank you.
Thank you. Our next question is from the line of Surya Patra from Philip Capital. Please go ahead.
Yes, thanks for this opportunity. My first question is from the US. Any specific reason that we are seeing a kind of sequential?
Your voice is not very clear.
Hello. Is it audible?
Yes, a slight disturbance, but yeah, it's audible now.
Okay. So I was just asking about the US business. Any specific reasons for that we have seen a kind of sequential correction in the US business? Because we know that the previous quarter was not a great quarter in any manner about the flu sales contribution. So hence there was no reason for a kind of a sequential correction, although there was a kind of issue of a pricing pressure. And given that, what is the kind of outlook that you are having for the full year in US?
So in the US, two things which we spoke about in our conference call. One is there is a lot more competition that we get to see on established products and new products, with more approvals that have come through both from existing and new players. So that is something that has definitely happened in the market, where you're seeing far more competition and bid. Second is that there have been least supply disruptions during the last 1 year. And that also means that what we used to get to see opportunities of one-time sales by being able to supply products which are in shortage, that issue has come down for the oral drugs. So that's the second part by which we see some gap. And thirdly, we have said that for the because of the lower activities at the prescription level, some of the products, the prescription volume have come down, which all correspondingly means that the buying also reduces. So those are some of the things that have happened, which has led to this. For us, for annual point of view, we are still looking at a low single digit growth for this year. And if some of the critical new products succeed, we can see some better traction on that. So that is our current estimate. In terms of the next 2 to 3 years, we believe that both transdermals and our specialty injectables and some of the complex oral solid products will allow us to then scale up from the current levels of what we are at.
Okay. Second question is on the COVID portfolio and the anticipation from the vaccine initiatives. So you have obviously indicated about it already, but I am saying, let's say, given the recent developments about the approval for the combination of a Covishield plus Covaxin, the approval of a J&J's single dose, and your recent the commentary to the earlier question that your expectation of a 1 to 1.5 crore kind of per month target, that is anyway can be achievable anyway. So that means, are you kind of moderating your expectations are here? Hello. Yes, sir. Hello. So.
Yes, sir. Sorry, your voice was not very clear.
Yeah. So my second question was on the vaccine opportunity, sir. So I was saying that given the recent developments about the allowing or approval of the Covishield plus Covaxin kind of mix in India, and the single dose of J&J, and right now you have mentioned about your expectation of a 1 to 1.5 crore per month kind of volume. So whether that is a kind of moderation from your earlier expectation that you were thinking about achieving 3 to 5 crore kind of level by December or so. So anything on that front?
So I think your question I understand, but I think you're mixing two things. When I say 1 to 1.5 crore, that is monthly, and what we had said 3.5 crore was till December. So we haven't moderated our stance yet. We believe that currently whatever we will be able to make, we can find an opportunity of market for it in India, and obviously there is market outside, but currently let's focus only on India. So we don't see any concern on that. If you look at the manufacturers today in India, Covishield has a very large manufacturing capacity, but other than that, there is nobody who's achieving more than 1 to 2 crore, and any of the approved vaccines have not reached commercially availability at all in India. So I think in India, we still require a lot of vaccines. And for us, we believe that with whatever understanding we have a very currently a very strong demand for our vaccine, both for the use in the current form, but also for the adolescent use where there is currently none approved. So as I said, till end of the year, we believe anywhere around 3+ crore, we hope to manufacture and supply. And that is at full capacity. So we are going to be making to full capacity.
Okay. Sir, my next question is about the expectations about, let's say, Virafin, what we have been so excited about. So obviously the number of COVID cases has come down. So is it better to think that, okay, the opportunity is really drying out here, and that is one. And a clarification about this minority interest seems higher since last couple of quarter or last two quarter. Is it because that there is a kind of COVID related benefit that is seen in the consumer business, and hence the minority interest is looking a bit elevated?
So on the first question, if we all understand what's happening with COVID-19 and the impact it has everywhere and the way it's moving, you know that the infections and the peaks come in waves and in cycles. So we have obviously gone through a very strong second cycle, a second wave of COVID. But we know that with what we are seeing in Europe, in the rest of the world, we know that there is an imminent wave of the third wave that will be there. So the opportunistic products, or products that are related to COVID, will obviously make more sense when you see those kind of problems around. For Virafin specifically, we are also looking to export it in other countries. And we are also looking to build an outside India business beyond what is India. But currently, what you say is right. In India, there are much lower cases and prevalence. So currently, the need for COVID drugs is lower. But both for Virafin, Remdesivir, we are seeing, we will see a potentially a good export market that we want to build for. For Remdesivir, we have significantly good export business and India business still. And we will do the same for Virafin also. Related to your second question, maybe Vishal or Nitin Bhai can take it up.
Yeah, so Surya, actually, the non-controlling interest is mainly for Zydus Wellness. And as you know, Zydus Wellness is a seasonal business. So it's not evenly spread across all the four quarters. So quarter four of the financial year and quarter one of the financial year are the main seasons, where you will see higher top line as well as profits in that business. And quarter two and quarter three are relatively lean because the season for two or three of their brands is not there. So as a result, you will see this kind of trend every year. So quarter one of any year and quarter four of any year will have higher profits in that as well, then resulting into higher non-controlling interest also. One exception was last financial year, where because of first wave of COVID, Zydus Wellness did not have good profits. And as a result, the non-controlling interest was lower. This quarter onward, it is now normalized.
Okay. Yeah. Thank you, Mr. Tilak.
Thank you. Next question is from the line of Anubhav Agarwal from Credit Suisse. Please go ahead.
Yeah, thank you. Good evening. The first question is on the ZyCoV-D vaccine. Just trying to understand that phase 3 efficacy data difference between the 3 dose and the 2 dose. I think you have declared 3 dose, but you haven't, I think, mentioned about 2 dose. Can you just talk about, Cheryl, by that? How are the 2 difference on the efficacy front?
So the between the difference between the 3 dose, the 3 visit and 2 dose, the amount of dose given is the same. It's just that instead of giving between 0, 28 and 56 days, we do only two times dosing between 0 and 28 days. So we believe that will bring obviously far more patient compliance and ease of administration. So that's the, so I think that from the amount of vaccine given, it's the same between the 2 arms. And what we have, once we obviously get through the registration, all that, we'll explain more, but we have seen equal and better immunogenicity and antibody response in the 2 visit versus the 3 visit. And that is where we believe that could be the potential mode of use for this vaccine as we move forward.
So would you say that so effectively you're saying the efficacy data is you've seen better in the 2 dose versus 3 mg versus 2 mg one. So what about the safety data? Has that been comparable as well?
Yes. So the safety wise also, there have been no safety events or any serious safety events with this arm also. And across all the from phase 1 till now, we have not had any safety concerns, and that obviously has been published and shown to the regulator. So on that, we are fine. And as I said, it has better immunogenicity, so it could potentially have a higher efficacy. But currently, I would say conservatively to assume similar efficacy would be right.
And what kind of population base, like you ran the trial on 28,000 patients on 2 mg1, on 3 mg1, what was the population base on which you ran the trial?
So the phase 3mg trial has been done on the immunogenicity point of view. So it has been done in close to, I don't have the exact number right now, but around close to, I think, 800 to 1,000.
Okay. And for the adolescent, are you going for the 2-dose version even for the adolescent, or for them it's a 3-dose, 2mg1 only?
So again, these are all for the regulators to discuss. We believe with the body of evidence and data we have shown, it potentially will also be a 2-dose regimen.
Okay.
2-visit regimen.
Sure. And for the export markets, have you already started applying, or once you get the emergency use authorization here in India, then you will start applying to the export market?
So it's still work in progress. You know, for us, the current capacities that we have, we feel we will not have enough capacity to serve India. So to look at export is not something practical right now, because obviously we won't be able to make any supplies. But we are looking at partnerships and to see whether we can partner for future supplies and maybe give technology transfer to other countries for manufacturing of these vaccines. Few of them have approached us. So we are in those discussion phases. But in the near term, this we are largely only focused for India right now.
Thank you, Cheryl. I'll join back with you.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Forum Parekh from Choice Institutional Equities. Please go ahead.
Hello. Am I audible?
Yes.
Yes, you are.
Yeah, so my question is on wellness. It's a follow-up question. The sir just said that Q1 and Q4 is like the seasonally strong quarter. So would it be right to assume that the next 2 quarter, the growth rate will taper down to what it is reported in Q1?
So growth is obviously corresponding to the last quarter of the previous financial year. So it is not an impact of growth, it's the absolute sales. quarter four and quarter one are larger versus quarter two and quarter three. But we are not talking about growth tapering down. We are talking about the size of the business being different between the quarters.
Okay. And so if you can just throw some color on the US business, like, we are seeing Delta variant over there and price erosion. So what would the probable impact be on the US sales out of these situations?
So currently the impact mostly is because of the price of more competition and less disruption in supply. I think the growth possibility is only when you are with the possibilities of new launches that we get to do. And, US is a cyclical business. So, it goes through these cycles of consolidation and again then disruption. So we believe that if you have the breadth of portfolio, which is large enough, and if you have good operational efficiencies and good inventory positions, one will see an opportunity that one will get to build on from the existing portfolio. And the rest is obviously to file a new portfolio, which we have been doing, and launching new products and slowly building two franchises, the transdermal side and the injectable side, which can be very large and sizable for the organization.
Okay. And if I may just ask one more question, I just wanted to know, how much percentage of COVID drugs do we export?
Currently, it's only remdesivir in a way, because the government had blocked exports for a very long time. So it's only remdesivir and no other drugs which are more COVID related.
Okay, so that would be like less than 5% of the COVID portfolio that we would be exporting.
The export of remdesivir, I don't have the exact number, but it's not very large for the last quarter.
Okay, no problem. Thank you.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Prakash Agarwal from Axis Capital. Please go ahead.
Yeah, hi, thanks for the opportunity and good evening. First one is on the US growth trajectory. So much has been talked about, kind of approvals, expected launches, JVs and for injectables and all. But qualitatively, on this base that we are clocking around $200 million, do we see growth going forward in this year and next year? Or do we see that these opportunities that we spoke about, this would be able to cover the base business price erosion? How do we see this for the next 6, 12 months or over the next 12, 18 months?
So for the immediate quarters, we are seeing we'll do a little bit better. So there will be some minor growth or a single digit growth that we are aspiring for in the next quarter and beyond. Going forward in the next financial year, with some new products, some settlements that we have, and more of some of the injectable launches that we hope to see very soon, and some of the more complex oral new product approvals that we are getting to see in the next quarter, we hope we can build upon that base to minimize the erosion that we may see on one of our mesalamine franchise. So that should offset that. And then more new product launches can build upon the traction on the US business. So I still believe for the next 3 to 4 quarters, we would see a low single digit growth, and maybe protecting the base would be the right way to look at it, other than some opportunistic things that we get to see, which we don't know of and which can't plan for. But going forward, I think the other portfolios coming in, which is the injectables and transdermals with the clearance, once we get for Moraiya, we'll get to see some better traction on new product successes.
Yeah, I mean, that pulls me to the second question on Moraiya. So, if there is any update on desktop inspection, are you hearing that a couple of inspections have started in Hyderabad? So, any update there, or what are you hearing or what are you getting prepared for?
So one, we have now at least got the clearance from the FDA point of view, understanding that we have finished our process of corrective actions, and they have been submitted and they have been accepted by the FDA, and the FDA will schedule for an audit. Now the audit with in terms of physical audit or any other form of audit is still unknown, but we will now be FDA, we are expecting an audit is what we can say.
So what I understand, the CAPA plan, you already executed the CAPA plan as required?
Yeah, it's already been executed and discussed and closed. We are now, we need a some sort of inspection to get triggered for getting out of the warning letter.
Perfect. And lastly, on the margin side, there was a mention by Nayak sir on this, you know, we are expecting efficiencies to kick in and margins to improve by 80-100 bips. That is on the current base of 22-23%, or that was more like a generic statement? How do we think about margin expansion for this year and next year?
So it's on a current base.
Okay, so which is about 22-23%.
Yes.
And this is over 12-18 months?
Yeah, in 12 months, yeah.
Okay, perfect. Great. Thank you. I'll join back the queue.
Thank you. Our next question is from the line of Kunal Damesha from MK Global. Please go ahead.
Thank you for giving the opportunity again. So on the generic injectable business, specifically in US, what is our aspiration? You know, what is our current size in terms of number of products, and maybe if you can share value, and you know, from which plant our future pipeline is kind of fighting.
So our aspiration for the US injectable business is that we want to build at least a $250+ million business in the next 3 to 4 years, and that's our current estimate. And this includes a lot of important complex products as well as a large number of products that we hope to still continue to file. Our critical site for US injectables business is our site in Vadodara, which is Liva, which has 4 lines. And it is approved by the US FDA. At least 2 of the lines are already approved. We have one new site, which is a biologic site, where we got a prefilled syringe approval. And so that site stands approved. And then we have our Alidac site, which manufactures cytotoxic injectables, where we sell liposomal doxorubicin from, and hope to file for other injectables also there. And then we have one of our joint venture sites which does CMO work for us also, where we would also see some oncology filing and launch from. So these are largely the plants which are used. They all have currently a very good track record of multiple inspections and have done well with their inspections. So they are all good. In terms of complex injectables, one strategy that we do also have is that we also have partnered in products where these products are partnered in from European and some of the Asian countries, and they also have a good track record on the FDA, and we will be also launching many of the injectables through our in-license portfolio.
Sure. If you can provide the size of the current US injectable portfolio?
I'm not, it's 35 or 60. $35 million, I think.
Which yeah, it's about $35 million
for annum. Sure. Thank you. And second question, again coming back to vaccine. So I believe you know, we had one data request from DCGI, and I think we have complied to that. So at this moment, what is pending? Is there another data request from them, or we are just waiting for the response?
So we have one data point that we had to provide last week, but it is being done at a government instituted lab, but that has got delayed, so that's getting submitted tomorrow or day after. After that, for at least we believe currently for the approval phase, we would have completed most of our data request.
Sure. And one last on the vaccine facility, you know, that we have kind of created. what other, maybe dosage form or other kind of vaccine or other, formulations we can, produce in that facility?
So there are vaccines, there's two plants. One is a drug substance plant and one is a drug product plant. The drug product plants are existing facilities which make other vaccines and other products also. So that is fungible. With respect to the drug substance plant for the DNA vaccine, it's a recombinant vaccine plant. So it can take up some other recombinant products. But currently, for the foreseeable near future, obviously we don't have any other capacities to do anything with this plant. So this will be currently dedicated only for the DNA vaccine. Potentially, we are also looking at developing more products, more vaccine platform using this technology. So that is that will be the ongoing work that will continue for this. So it is a recombinant plant, so it's, in a way, it, after some modification, it can be repurposed for some recombinant biologics. But currently, this capacity is going to be fully resourced and dedicated for only vaccine products.
Sure. Thank you.
Thank you. Next question is from the line of Nimish Mehta from Research Delta Advisors. Please go ahead.
Yeah, thanks for the opportunity. A lot of my questions have been answered. Just one thing on the US side, I'd like to know. Are we likely to launch other Nizlamine franchise, especially products like Gelvicol in the near future? Some outlook on there.
Could you repeat the product name? I couldn't hear it well.
Gelvicol, or any other Nizlamine product,
So So we do have a portfolio of at least three more methylamines that we want to launch, and we would be launching some of them very soon.
Meaning in this year itself, this financial year.
Yes.
Okay, wonderful. And second, just a quick update on the domestic business. How many products, are we likely to launch this year in the domestic market? And how many of them would be first to market?
So currently we have a portfolio of about 35 molecules that we are working, which we want to launch, which will either have limited competition or be first to market. In the recent times, we have launched a good amount of franchise in the diabetes space, including Vildagliptin, Teneligliptin. And future, we will be launching some of the other gliptins. So that's one. Then we have launched Dydrogesterone, which is again one of the very few limited competition products. So large part of our now future portfolio is driven towards launching low competition or sort of first generic. When we launched our biosimilar Kadcyla, again, it's the only generic in India and in the world. So we'll see a healthy pipeline of products that would be first in India, either first generic or potentially first, like Lipaglin. We also have Desidustat that we hope to file by end of this year. So we would see a large part of portfolio being complex and first kind of launches in the India. Beyond that, obviously, life cycle management and product life cycle extension happens through doing formulation research that we also continue to do for our products. And we, COVID is a different year. We have launched quite a few COVID products, but on average, we are looking to launch anywhere between 30 to 45 new launches in India.
Wow. And a lot of them would be first time in the market, right?
So 30 to 45 in a year will not all be first time, but if you take a 3 to 4 year view, then at least 30 to 35 important critical launches which have limited competition or are day one launches.
Okay, understood. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Our next question is from the line of Sameer Baisiwala from Morgan Stanley. Please go ahead.
Thank you and good evening, everyone. Sharvil, this is about the Zycov-D vaccine. So, question number one: what are your thoughts on the efficacy study for adolescents?
So efficacy is never done in cohorts like that. When you do a large phase 3, you do general efficacy, and then you do immunogenicity, which is divided in different cohorts, older age group, comorbidities, and then the younger age group. So we don't do separate efficacy right now. That will get created once you have a larger set of data. So we can talk about overall efficacy, which is a good representation of the overall efficacy. What we do is immunogenicity for all these cohorts to make sure that the antibody response and the IgG, as well as the neutralizing antibody response, as well as the T cell response or the interferon gamma challenge, are all similar or they're giving different trends. And we have seen a very good trend for obviously older age groups. In children, we have seen a higher trend on higher antibody formation. So potentially it could mean that they have a far better, higher protection. So that's how the all the studies are planned.
Okay, great. So when you get the approval, you get it for both adolescents and adults.
That is what we will be hoping for. But I mean, once we get the regulators' nod, we can talk more about it. But we do have filed for all of this data.
Okay. And any timelines when you expect approval and then get into the market?
So again, it's very difficult to predict that. As I said, the last set of information we believe we will submit in the next 1 to 2 days. By and large, it's a rolling review that happens. So all the other information has already been reviewed. So if everything is okay, and if they don't see any, and if we also don't see an issue in the last data, and if the data is fine, we can potentially see an approval in the next 1 to 2 weeks maximum.
Okay, so this is pretty close. And so what's the market access work being done? If you can just share with us, would you be routing it through all private channels, some tie-ups that you have done? Would you be, because their volumes are not that large, would you be going all India or just a Western market?
So currently there are government sourcing, which potentially could be the largest sourcing that happens, right? The government did commit that they may be potentially buying for many of the vaccines 75%, leaving 25% for the retail. The second is we have also done a lot of activity created a lot of capability on the digital side to build for the whole supply chain and dose administration and the other things that are required in terms of patient support and other required things. So that whole activity is in place, linking it with the app to make sure that the right dosing and everything happens. And we have gone beyond it in terms of providing far more critical information. So all of that is done. We do have requests from institutions and large institutions and mid-sized institutions for direct buying, which we have in principle agreed to do so. So as soon as we get an approval, as soon as our pricing gets cleared, and as soon as the government commits to their quantities, accordingly we will obviously then supply to the rest of the market as well. Currently, current demand, obviously we have what we produce, we have expectations from customers for more than that, so we will see how we will be able to commit to the different supplies.
Okay, and one final one on this, Shelva, I don't know how comfortable you're talking. Can you talk a bit about the pricing for this government versus private and your margins expectation on this?
So we haven't had that.
Yeah, please.
So currently, we have a reference price of approval for the government purchases. So obviously, every vaccine is different and the technology is different as well as the investments are different. So that is a place where we still need to discuss with the authorities. But obviously it will be, I mean, we already know the floor price which exists, which is upwards of 200 rupees and plus, which we know of. And then there is a private market. We believe in the private market, we haven't decided yet on the pricing because again, it's a question of volume. So how much volume we can, give to private market versus what we give to the government will define the pricing also. So I think there are a lot of moving parts. I believe it's not too far away. Maybe in the next 1 to 2 weeks, we should be able to achieve that also post our approval. And as soon as we do that, we can give you an update on it.
Okay, excellent. Thank you so much. And just final before I go is on Moraiya. Your guess, is it going to be fiscal 22 when re-inspection happens, or you think it can go beyond it? Then keeping in mind the vaccination and the current COVID situation doesn't get any worse.
I am still hopeful for fiscal 22, the inspection and clearance.
Okay. Thank you so much.
I mean, because we just have to wait for an inspection now.
Okay, got it.
Thank you. Our next question is from the line of Harith Ahmed from Spark Capital. Please go ahead.
Hi, good evening. Thanks for the opportunity. My first question is on Asacol HD. You had commented about slower uptake in the last quarter and in the fourth quarter. So have things normalized on this front, and anything that you're hearing on potential competition in this product, because there's a patent expiry that is quite imminent.
So two things versus last year, we have seen obviously the volumes for the brand prescriptions come down. But if you say quarter on quarter, then they have stabilized. So they are stable quarter on quarter. Over the last year, their prescriptions have come down, as it has done for many products post-COVID. On respect to competition, we currently believe, and we only know of one, we know of one company which has filed for the product, and I don't think there are any products that have approved yet, and post the patent expiry is only when we'll probably get to know that, but we made an assumption that we'll get to see one to two competitors in the market. That's our best estimate as of now.
And on the transdermal front, how many filings have been made till date, and how many of those are from Moraiya, and how many from the other facility?
So we have, I think, two products from non-Moraiya facilities, and all the remaining rest are from Moraiya and one from our US facility. And Moraiya is largely driving the oral the contraceptive side of the transdermals that we have filed for.
Okay. And then last one on COVID vaccine, on the two-dose vaccine, will the immunogenicity and safety data that you have already generated, will that suffice for approval, or will there be a requirement for full-fledged safety efficacy trial?
So it's the same amount of dose that we're giving, so we strongly believe that this will suffice for the approval.
All right. That's all from my side. Thank you very much.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Ranbir Singh from Sunidhi Securities. Please go ahead.
Yeah, thanks for taking my question. So on Zycovid side, just to understand, are we working on any other delivery system for non-invasive, like nasal or something?
Hello.
Needle-free dose delivery.
Sorry, Mr. Patel, so request you to please repeat.
Yeah. So I said for the current for our current vaccine, it's already a intradermal application, and it's a needle-free application of the dosing. So it is already one of the, I would say, future-ended technologies which are almost non-invasive and which leads to very little side effects.
Okay. And just for my understanding, digits and doses are a different nomenclature, or this is the same? Like we talk about two digits, and sometimes we talk about two doses. So these two are different. I think this is the same.
Before we used to give the vaccine over a period of three visits, so three doses in the way. So 0, 28, and 56. Now it will be over two visits, 0 and 28.
Okay, so it is the same like having a two doses at two visits. So this is the same. It is not like one visit may have more doses.
No, the dose is earlier was 2 milligram over 3 times. Now it is 3 milligrams over 2 times.
Okay. Okay. And on US generic side, the most of competition is Mesalamine products, or we see, you know, across products that competition has impacted, you know, badly?
No, it's a cross product.
So, like atorvastatin also, we saw, you know, competition. I think that should that would have also impacted Q1 results, right?
As of the last 4-5 months, the competition has been across portfolio for all of the generic companies. So it is more wider. It is not specific to a few products.
Okay. Okay. And last one, the related one, like 35 products launches we are talking about and single digit growth. So I still, so competition or the price erosion is likely to be deeper even going forward also. Or you see that now things are getting stabilized?
So we are seeing at least a high single digit erosion. For obviously products which you are exclusive with, there will be much more erosion. But generally, you're seeing a high single-digit erosion to the U.S. Business. And that's what we are predicting, at least for the next couple of quarters.
Okay. Okay. And you spoke about 30 to 35 product launches in India also in this year?
Overall, yes.
Okay. Okay, that's clarified. Thanks a lot. And all the best.
Thank you. Our next question is from the line of Kedar from Nirmal Bang Institutional Equities. Please go ahead. Kedar, please go ahead with the question.
Hello. Am I audible?
Yes, please go ahead.
Yeah, can you share your biosimilar revenues for the quarter? And how much of that was from India? Also, if you could share some color on the biosimilar revenue that should shape up in the emerging markets over the next 3 years.
So on the biosimilar front, currently most of our revenue is driven out of India only. In the next calendar year, we will see more launches in the emerging markets, and which will add to the overall revenue on the biosimilar side. On the biosimilar in the India, we believe we will be, I'm sure Vishal can give you the exact number, but I think we are about 350 crores right now on an annualized basis. And we get to see it to hit 500 crores soon. So that's where we are on the India biosimilar side. And globally, as I maybe said earlier also, that we have now nominated 2 biosimilar programs for global development, which will see commercialization post 2025. So that's the current plan for biosimilar.
Okay. And just to follow up on that, which are the key countries that you will be focusing on in the emerging market? And do you have any plans to out-license or market them on your own?
So currently, a biosimilar EM strategy, emerging market strategy, is mostly licensing. If you look at which will be the focus markets, which will be also add good revenue to us, it will be the Latin American countries driven by Mexico and then Colombia, Venezuela, and others. In Asia, we are looking at Philippines, Thailand, and Indonesia being the critical markets, and then obviously Sri Lanka and other smaller markets, Myanmar. In Middle East, we want to build towards the Saudi Arabia side of the market. And we have also now approvals in Russia. So Russia will become a critical market to sell for Russia and the CIS countries nearby. So this will be the current plan for the EM markets. What is good for us is that we already have approvals in Russia. We have approvals coming now in Asia, and potentially soon approvals in Latin America also. So this would help us build at least 3 to 4 biosimilars in all of these markets.
Thank you for answering my question. Just a last question, that in case you see a delay in Moraiya resolution, would we potentially see a dip in US revenues?
So it's so Moraya has important products which are transdermals, which we need approvals for. So they are important in terms of our future revenue. Most of the oral drugs are filed out of other parts. Injectables also filed out of other sites. So they will definitely have an impact, but over a period of time, it will not be meaningful.
Okay. Thank you for taking my question.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Anubhav Agarwal from Credit Suisse. Please go ahead.
Yes, thank you. Sharvil Bhai, one just out of curiosity, this 2mg and 3mg doses, so when these were so close, I'm a little surprised that you started with such a large trial of 28,000 patients with 2mg dose, which because you very well knew that your vaccine is going to be 3-dose vaccine. So what was the hindrance of starting the trial with 3mg dose at that time?
So again, this is science, right? We are doing DNA vaccine for the first time. So obviously, we would have not always known how everything moves, and as we move forward, things get to know because the immunogenicity and other data comes out much later, and same does animal data and other things. So in this development cycle, things kept on happening parallelly and not in sequence, right? So that is one part of the issue, and the second is, we were also looking at it saying that if we have a longer time in terms of gap, do we see a higher antibody response? And that could potentially also have been. So the 3-dose made sense from doing that. What we are now getting to see is that 2-dose is also behaving similar or better. So maybe that hypothesis was not fully there. And it's an intradermal delivery. So we had to make sure that we have an application possible that can be done in 2 doses, I mean, 2 times versus 3 visits. And that also means, because we have to only inject 100 microliters in a way. So it's a non-invasive injection, insertion, but we had to do it. So we had to, all of those were questions that still needed to be answered. So that is what happened, and that's how the whole development journey went through. Now we believe that because the safety is similar and obviously the immunogenicity is similar, it will end up being only 2 visits, but it will still be taken on both arms as it was done in the 2 milligram.
Right. Okay. And the second question was on the US market, just trying to understand the erosion better in this quarter. So was it that because of the COVID, the buyers were having a larger amount of inventory to stock with for the last year, and now they've started reverting back to the normal inventory, and that's why there was a pressure among suppliers because the volume went down from the buyers in terms of purchase. Was it like that the reason that the price erosion increased for everybody in this quarter?
Anubhav, I think no, the buying came down, and you can attribute some part to higher inventory, but that was mostly to do with last quarter, not this quarter, the gone quarter buy. And but it is more now all around. Higher competition. We are seeing far more new players with new approvals who seem to be very aggressive in pricing, which we believe in, as it is not practically possible and responsible to be going at such low pricing. So that's what's happening to the current market. So we are seeing far more bids and far more challenges to pricing, which we believe will, some of it seems irrational, but I think over a period of time, maybe some of this will stabilize. But that's the current scenario.
Okay, thanks. That's helpful. Just one more clarity on this US one. When you guide to low single digit growth in the US business, so you're expecting competition in the SFL this year itself? And despite that competition, you're guiding for 2-3% growth?
So we are assuming at least one generic will be on the market. That's what our current assumption is on the immediate basis. Post-patent expiry.
Okay, sure. Thanks, Sharvil.
Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, due to time constraints, that would be our last question for today. I now hand the conference over to Mr. Ganesh Nayak for closing comments. Thank you, and over to you, sir.
Thank you very much, and look forward to interacting with you again in the month of October when we declare our quarter 2 results for FY22. Thank you, and have a nice evening.
Thank you very much.